Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Hey, what is up, everybody?
And welcome back to Mile Higher Podcast, episode 349. I am your host, Kendall.
I'm Josh.
And we are joined by Janelle and Ian. Hey, guys, the gang's finally back.
I know.
The gang's all here. Yeah.
We made it.
How you guys doing today? Doing all right?
Doing all right. Ready to jump into this.
That's good. Yeah. Yeah, we have
a very mysterious disappearance today.
Yeah, we do.
It is, it's one of those cases where it really seems like the police did nothing whatsoever.
Yeah, no, they,
when they should have been doing a whole lot.
But, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's
garbage.
Seems like this could have been solved. We could know what happened to Damian Nettles, but, unfortunately we have no answers whatsoever. It just seems like he vanished. And without a trace and just disappeared off the face of the earth. And
yeah, their mistakes early on really insanely frustrating. And I mean, they did acknowledge that and apologized to their family, but yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, this is in the 90s. So we're talking about 1996. Mm-hmm. And I think the other component to this that's kind of weird is he disappeared from an island, the Isle of Wight off the coast of England. And you would think, with him being last seen on an island, it might be easier to locate somebody who goes missing on an island because obviously they're on the island or they've left via the air or water. And this is, you know, a big port is located here on the Isle of Wight. So seems likely he might have been taken off the island potentially, or he's somewhere on the island to this day. Obviously not alive anymore, but they've not been able to find any trace of him. There's been like virtually no significant updates over the years. It's kind of crazy.
It's like he just disappeared, but there are a few possibilities. I think one theory really stands out amongst the rest. I think we kind of all agree on what we think happened, and it seems like it's what everyone involved with the case for the most part believes as well.
Yeah, but it's a case where his loved ones are still, you know, at this point they just want to find him. So that they can, you know, lay him to rest and, you know, just know where he is.
Yeah.
To not know where he is just the absolute worst case scenario, I think, in any type of disappearance, and it's just unfathomable
to
deal with that over the years. So, but yeah, so obviously want to keep his story alive. And
yeah, he seemed like a really great person. Funny and
was really young, still had his whole life ahead of him.
Yeah. I mean, he was so loved by so many people, and a lot of people have really been hurting since this happened, and I can't imagine what it would be like to just not know, you know. How can you ever seek any closure? And I think, yeah, getting at least either some answers or being able to have his remains and lay him to rest would give them some closure. I mean, how can you ever get like
at least
full
some
closure?
Peace,
but just something. For these poor people who all just seem so sweet. But with that being said, let's go ahead and jump in. I want to give you some background on Damian. So he was born on June 21st, 1980 at the Glen Eagles Hospital in Singapore. Damian's mother, Valerie Nettles, said he was beautiful with big brown eyes, scrumptious and loving, an endearing child full of character. And when he was a baby, Damian loved his older sister, Sarah, and would follow her everywhere. She said about her younger brother, he was warm and passionate as a person. Damian had a way about him that would just keep you entertained for hours on end. I remember so much laughter. I also remember arguments and sibling rivalry, but that was normal, of course. I mean, where is there not sibling rivalry in a relationship? And she basically said the same thing I did, that what brother and sister doesn't fight with one another, but mainly I remember laughter. Valerie would also add about Damien, he was always a joker. He wanted to make people laugh. There wasn't a malicious bone in his body. He would help the underdog, sometimes even to his own disadvantage. He was sensitive, caring, loving, and thoughtful. There was not a bad bone in his body. So 4 years after Damien was born, his parents, Valerie and Edward, had his little brother, James. And James would say this about his relationship with Damien. We were close and shared a room for most of our lives. But with most siblings, this closeness came in the form of punches, headlocks, and this made me laugh, borderline torture. However, even with this friction between us, he was always my big brother. And I always wanted to be as funny, artistic, and as loved by others as well. And the family would go on to welcome his younger sister, Melissa, in 1987, before Edward's work took them back to England to live on the Isle of Wight, just right off of the English mainland. Valerie had grown up on the Isle and only left to attend school, where she met Edward, and his work soon took them across the globe, and she was excited to raise her growing family on this, you know, familiar ground, return back to her roots. And the village they moved to, Gunnard, was near one of the main port cities of Cowes. And it's described as a tight-knit, safe area where they could raise their four children. And according to Metro UK, it was, quote, the type of place where you could leave your windows open if you popped out to the shops and where teenagers roamed freely between each other's homes.
This is the first time I'd ever even heard of the Isle of Wight.
It seems really lovely, doesn't it?
It does. I just Googled some pictures of it and it's stunning. I mean, there's some like sheer cliff faces, blue water. It looks like in the summertime or when there's nice weather, it's extremely stunning. I mean, green everywhere. Lots of like little towns kind of positioned around the island with, you know, the larger port there.
Lots of greenery. The structures are obviously beautiful, classic. Yeah, this would be a cool place to visit, let alone to raise a family. Very idyllic.
Definitely. And it was here on the Isle of Wight that Damien really came into his own. Valerie said that Damien was a funny, happy boy, the life and soul of the party, and he liked to make his friends laugh. Arms and legs flailing, he was not always appreciated by his teachers, but he was not disliked at all. Just a fun-loving guy. Everybody seemed to really get along with him. You know, maybe a bit goofy in school where teachers are, you know, slightly annoyed, but nobody had really anything bad to say about him.
I love this picture of him. I don't know if he's in a bush or like climbing a tree, but he just looks so happy and free.
Yeah, that's a great pick. By the time Damien was in his teenage years, he had grown to be 6'4". That's pretty tall.
Definitely.
You know?
How tall are you, Josh? Lad.
I'm like 6'2".
Yeah.
Yeah, like 6'2". And I was always tall throughout school. In my teenage years, I was one of the taller kids.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously by the time junior, senior year, there's a couple other kids that kind of catch up and then surpass me in height. But 6'4" is definitely up there. I mean, that's a tall teenager for sure.
I'm surprised you didn't play basketball.
Yeah. I don't know how big basketball is out there. It'd probably be football.
Yeah, I wonder
football.
If it is. No, football. It's not called football.
Football, yeah.
No, basketball is not called football.
No, I'm saying the
soccer.
Sport is football.
No, that's soccer.
Yeah, but they call it football.
They call basketball football?
No, soccer.
We're talking football. About basketball.
No,
where do we get to
that
soccer?
The popular sport there would be football, a.k.a. soccer.
Yes, but I'm sure basketball also exists.
I don't know that basketball's that big out there.
Let's do a little research. I'm curious.
I don't think basketball's a huge, huge thing in the UK. I'm sure there's people that play it for sure.
Well, even more reason as a 6 foot
but go
four
to like,
lad to get in on it.
I'm curious.
Competition.
Pull up one of the parks in his neighborhood and see if there's a basketball hoop
That's
there.
That's a good point. So in England, they have a professional basketball league, but it's called the Super League. And I don't think anyone's ever...
You've never heard of it.
The Super League. All right.
No, soccer is everything there.
No,
football.
I knew that.
Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, 6'4", he would make a great basketball player for sure. Or he'd just be good at climbing trees too.
Yeah, which looked like he was doing.
But in his teenage years, he really made a very close group of friends between school and other people that he had met throughout the towns. It seems like he was a very social person. He was kind of out and about. like to have a lot of friends to hang out with. Damien's little brother, James, said, quote, I spent my youth getting close to his friends so that I could catch a glimpse of the Damien that they knew. I heard just how awesome my brother was. That's a really nice compliment for a brother to make.
Yeah.
You know, just wanting to be around these people he was around just to hear how great his brother was.
Yeah,
you know?
Well, I mean, that's how you can connect with him, never getting to know him at that older age, mm-hmm. you know.
Damien also had a great passion for music. He started first with the trombone in middle school, which, hell yeah. Dude, trombone is... You don't hear a lot of people playing the trombone.
I'm actually... Trombone? Okay, that's
yeah, that's one. The big long okay. one they have to like
I can't even
break
like,
down into two pieces.
What that sounds like.
like it's like
kind that?
Of, it's kind of this deep sounding
oh, like,
horn.
Da, da, da.
Yeah, it's kind of in the background of like a brass band.
Is so that what they play the like summer camps in the morning to wake everyone up?
No, that's called a bugle.
Oh.
They don't really play trombone. That, no, it's like
is
very
that they is it like Schitt's Creek?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's kind of a deeper sounding instrument. So he was into that, which is good for somebody with his height because it's a big instrument.
That's a good point.
Long arms to really like, you know, play that correctly. It wasn't his favorite though because it's probably missing a little bit of the cool factor. You know what I mean? Like, no hate out to the band
Trombone-ers.
Kids out there.
What did you
oh
say?
My God.
It just came to my head. That sounded worse than it sounded in my head.
What'd you say?
I said the tromboners.
That's fine. Get your head out of the gutter.
Yeah. Come on.
Okay. haven't heard that one before, but we love it.
In my opinion, shopping can be hard. And it can also be quite boring. And also very stressful. And these are all in my opinions. I know some people love shopping, love putting together their looks and are very into fashion. But for people like me who don't like any of it, there is Stitch Fix. Stitch Fix online personal styling makes it easy because shopping and figuring out your style can be really overwhelming, especially if that's not something that comes natural to you, right? And when it comes to getting dressed, sometimes I don't even know where to start. But I have been using Stitch Fix for the past couple years. I'm a paying customer and it has made it all so much easier for me. And that's why I love having my Stitch Fix stylist, because she really knows what works for me, especially because I've been working with her for so long. And she finds the pieces that are going to make me look good, that are going to make me feel confident and, you know, come...
Slay.
Yeah, slay. She's going to help me slay all day.
Every day.
And she also knows, like, what I'm not going to be into and what prices that I'm willing to pay and my sizing and, you know, sizing is constantly fluctuating and stuff. And one time that I really loved having Stitch Fix was during my pregnancy. They have a whole maternity setup for people that are currently pregnant because your body is constantly changing. And so it was really nice to just have pieces for the next stage of my pregnancy already waiting for me. It really could not be easier, guys. You just give your stylist your size, your style, your budget preferences, and you order boxes when you want and how you want. There's no subscription required, which I think is a misconception when it comes to Stitch Fix that, you know, you're not locked into anything. And they send you just for you pieces, plus outfit recommendations and styling tips, which are very, very, very handy in my opinion. I use them all the time. And then you just keep what you love and you send back the rest. And sending back the rest is also super easy because they send you a prepaid mailer envelope, shove everything back there, stick it in your mailbox or wherever you drop your mail, and you're good to go. But it's really like having your own personal style support person. And best part, in my opinion, is there's no stores, no crowds, no stress, just personalized looks that you're going to love, and Stitch Fix is going to make it easier for you to achieve that. Personal styling for everyone. I highly recommend it, guys. Truly, I have been a paying customer for years, and it's an excellent service, and it's totally customized to you. You can get started today at stitchfix.com/milehigher. That's stitchfix.com/milehigher.
So Damien eventually taught himself to play the guitar. I mean, it's pretty cool. Cool instrument to know how to play, the guitar, taught himself. And then from then on, he formed a small band with some friends, and they played everything, including classical, the Beatles.
Of course, the Beatles.
Strawberry Field. Love the Beatles. Contemporary music, and even some original songs. In high school, he began to take his studies a bit more seriously because he was talking about one day going into marine biology. He even helped his older sister, Sarah, study for her A-level final before she went to university just across the Solent Strait in the city of Portsmouth. Although Damien had been a great student, son, and brother, he still liked to party. What teenager doesn't? But him and his friends would often walk around Cowes trying to find a bar that would serve them, even though they were very much underage, which the drinking age in the UK is it 18 or is it 21 there?
I believe at this point in time, in 1996, it was 18.
18,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But now it could have changed.
No, it's still 18.
Good for them.
Yeah.
18 over there. Yeah.
Sick. Love that.
So at 16 and 6'4",
yeah,
he's going to have no issues most of the time walking around, getting drinks, not getting carded. So that's what they would do. They just walk around Cowes and go into different pubs and try to see who's going to give them drinks without carding them. And Damien would usually be the one to get the drinks because, of course, he's tall. You know, he looks a little bit older than some of his friends. And so he was kind of the hookup. His younger brother, James, remembered one night when Damien returned home from the youth club he had been at with friends, and Damien entered his room to chat and smoke it up. James said, quote, "As if it was the first time in my life I had become his friend as well as his brother. And this one memory hits me hardest, for within a few months, Damien was gone." But unknown to Damien's family, he had been hanging around some sketchy people in Cowes, and his friends had noticed there was definitely a change going on in his life and his behavior and his demeanor. It just seemed like whoever he was hanging out with was starting to rub off on him, and not in a good way. While the Isle of Wight, the largest single island in the United Kingdom with 147 square miles, is certainly a friendly area in most of the neighborhoods, its larger cities and ports have the potential for being very dangerous. In March of 2025, over 500 violent crimes were reported in that month alone. That's wild. A massive number considering the island only has a population of around 140,000 people. 500 violent crimes in March of 2025.
Yeah, that's insane.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that's like a higher number than New York many months.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, we should look that up. I wonder if it is.
And on top of that, its location along the English Channel makes it a prime location for drug couriers to ship illegal substances onto the island before dealers bring them to the English mainland. As of 2024, the Isle of Wight police force was reported as being inadequate at tackling serious and organized crime, as they did not have enough staff working on intelligence or surveillance. These are all recent numbers, and one can only imagine how much less this police force would have been back in the 90s, almost 30 years ago. And especially when we're talking about organized crime here,
mm-hmm.
It's kind of a whole other level of skills and investigation experience required to take care of a problem like that. So keep this all in mind when Damien was dropped off at his best friend Chris's house at around 7:30 p.m. on November 2nd, 1996.
I'm just like, from January 25 to May 2025, there were a recorded 264 shootings and 112 murders. But that's the entirety. That's all 3 months of January. Five months from January to May.
Mm-hmm.
So that's considerably less than 1 month in just March of 2025.
That's mind blowing.
Yeah.
This isn't just murders. Though.
Right,
this could
right.
be any sort mm-hmm. of assault,
theft,
battery, whatever it mm-hmm. may be, you know, on all levels. A fist fight at the pub. You know what I mean? Although I don't know if that even be reported.
Yeah, they might not tell the cops
on the Isle of Wight.
Yeah.
So, but if it's just like stabbings, because that's the thing is how much of it is actually shootings. You know what I mean? Because the shooting statistics over there are a lot different.
Oh yeah.
Obviously, than they are over here. It's mm-hmm. a lot of stabbings and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But regardless, I mean, that's a serious violent crime issue, and seems like the police force is inadequate in
mm-hmm. certainly
fighting that. So yeah. What's going on?
Well, Damien had been through a lot of life changes leading up to that night in November. He and his girlfriend of nearly 2 years, Abby Scott, had just broken up in July of 1996, but they did remain very close after the breakup. Abby would later say about Damien, "He was a big, gentle giant. I can't imagine why anyone would want to hurt him." However, around this time in the summer of 1996, Damien and his friends had become close with a new crowd in the port city of Cowes, just across from the Solent from the English mainland. And while Damien had always enjoyed partying, he mainly just kept to smoking weed and drinking. But this group that he was recently kind of hanging around with was known for I mean, actually had several known hard drug dealers in it. And for a while, Damien's best friend Chris wouldn't admit that he and Damien had gotten into hard drugs around this time. But eventually, he did tell Damien's brother James that they had been taking speed and other drugs from the dealers in Cowes. Now, for Abby, she couldn't take this personal shift in Damien. She said, "I saw flickers of someone else. He was hanging around with a different group of people who were a little bit older than him. There were obviously some things he was keeping to himself. It could have been drugs. I don't know." However, like we said, Damien and Abby did remain close, even after he became romantically involved with another girl named Gemma. And he called Gemma on November 2nd to tell her that he was missing her. Damien had spent the day negotiating with his mom to let him stay out until midnight, which was a few hours past his usual curfew. And eventually she did agree, and he left home wearing blue jeans and a black fleece, and he didn't take a bag or any other belongings beside from a black camera. Around 7:30, Damien's father dropped him off at Chris's house before they went to a low-key house party on East Cowes. However, Chris noticed that Damien was pretty bored, and the house party consisted of three couples, and Damien was the only one there on his own, which obviously isn't always the greatest setup and can be a little awkward. So while Chris believed that Damien was bored, his brother, Davey, said that Damien wanted to head out and buy some weed, since his usual dealer hadn't been available or out of stock for most of the summer. And at around 9:30 p.m., Damien and Chris left the party, and they bought some cider at a store that didn't ID Damien because, you know, he's super, super tall. And then they took a short ferry ride from East Cowes to West Cowes.
Which you guys can see in this photo here, just like how short that ferry ride is. If you zoom in between the Cowes floating bridge,
yeah,
and the like to the other side, it's just that little blue dotted line
tiny.
Right there.
Do we know how long that would take?
No, I think if I remember correctly, it's around like 15 minutes tops, like from boarding to getting off on the other side. But it is, it's just a strange, I don't feel like there's, at least for us in Colorado, you know, we don't have a lot of geography like this where it's right. Like the city is split in two by this strait and you have to like take a ferry to get to the other side.
Seems fun though. I'm jealous of people that take ferries all the time.
I know, dude.
Looks cool.
It seems really fun.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure some of them would be like, it's kind of a pain.
Yeah, we fucking
hate
it.
I wish I could just drive across the other side of town.
Yeah. Did you ever take the ferry when you were living in New York?
No, I never took the Staten Island Ferry, not once.
I'm surprised.
I know. It's free. Yeah, if you didn't know that. But I know, I wish I did. We did, like, whenever we go to the East Coast and Martha's Vineyard, we'll take, I mean, you have to take a ferry to get to Martha's Vineyard, but we'll take the little ferry to get to Chappaquiddick.
Oh, which, okay, yeah. Yeah,
that's a fun Chappaquiddick.
Yep. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, you weren't there when we've covered the Chappaquiddick story.
But... Really? You guys covered it?
Yeah. I think from TCKR, I'm not sure, but maybe here too. I don't know. Maybe we did both.
Maybe we did both.
Yeah.
I can't remember.
Janelle, remember we took the ferry as kids to Block Island from Rhode Island?
I do remember that. That was a good time.
It was. It was fun. I love a good ferry.
Mm-hmm. I took the Ellis Island ferry.
Whoa.
Oh, yeah. You did do that.
Went to Ellis Island. Mm-hmm. And you have to take a ferry to go over to see Statue of Liberty.
Yep. We took a lot of ferries when we were in Australia.
Yeah. Australia has a lot of ferries, mm-hmm. too. Yeah. Sydney Harbor. Yeah.
Yeah, it's cool. I wish
good
we were.
Times.
I love Colorado, but it sometimes sucks being landlocked.
It is kind of nice to get out on the water.
Yeah.
On a boat. Just any boat.
Free.
Hey, man. We got Chatfield Reservoir.
That's a good point.
Yeah, get on your little canoe.
And hope you don't contract a disease from the water.
A brain-eating amoeba in the water. But anyways, for the next several hours, Damien and Chris went from pub to pub on Cowes High Street, which has many security cameras trying to find a pub that would serve them even though they were underage. Chris also recalled that Damien was asking people in those pubs if they had seen his older sister, Sarah, even though he obviously knew where Sarah was. She was across the Solent in Portsmouth at university. But Valerie would later try to explain this by saying that perhaps Damien was using his sister's name to see if anyone at the pub maybe knew who she was, which would kind of give him an in with them and be like, oh yeah, I know your sister. Oh yeah. You know, it's just kind of that connection, you know. Oh yeah, we're basically friends. So yeah, let me hook you up with a drink. And she thinks that's kind of what was happening, which to me makes a lot of sense. I mean,
yeah, that seems. I definitely like at high school parties would try to drop my sister's name
older kids and stuff to kind of get in with them. Totally. At 10 p.m., Damien was first captured walking into Yorkie's chip shop. At this time, the chip shop was fairly busy, and all Damien did was pick up a salt shaker, set it down, and then he walked out of the restaurant. At around 10:30, Chris was cold and wet and was trying to persuade Damien it's time to go home, saying that there is no way they would get served at this point, and it was just stupid and a waste of time to stay out any later. Which, according to Chris, Damien agreed, and the two then walked out of town before they parted ways at the steps of Northwood Park. Chris said, quote, I went straight home, and I was 100% sure that Damien had headed up through the park towards his house. But for Damien, the night was far from over. Instead of making the 20-minute walk back to his family's home, he headed back over to Cowes High Street. Multiple witnesses there saw Damien wandering around High Street that night, and they reported that he seemed to be heavily intoxicated and, quote, spaced out, much more under the influence than he was when he parted ways with Chris. Damien then walked into Yorkie's chip shop for a second time, and his interaction with the employee there was much stranger. But let's go ahead and play this clip of the security camera footage of that second trip into Yorkie's chip shop.
Damien starts behaving oddly.
Yeah, certainly out of it.
Yeah. Just kind of one. He's like, one,
yeah,
what?
Yeah.
And he seems like he's bugging out. Yeah. And he's like looking over his shoulder. Kind of tell his eyes are kind of all big.
Well, and even the way he's like, when he says, like, can you say it? I can't hear you. He says, one, please. Like, even Damien's getting frustrated that he's not understanding him. It definitely does not seem like he's in his right mind, you know?
Yeah, no, he thinks he's being very clear.
Right.
Yeah.
But is he just inebriated from drinking, or
something
did he take
more,
something else? We have no idea.
Or could he possibly, and this is just a thought I've had, and I don't know how much water this holds, but the idea of him getting GHB in his system or something like that, just because of how fast it seemed to happen, where he went from 0 to 60. I mean, his friend said, you know,
yeah.
I don't know. It's just a thought I've had, but it doesn't seem like it's been floated by any investigators much, but you never know.
You never know. I mean, nobody knows what it was that kind of flipped the switch there.
Yeah.
I think the only like confirmed drugs just in the scene is like, Chris said specifically that they had done speed, and then we know that other people did heroin, and we also know that they were dealing coke and other stuff like that.
But like speed and coke, I feel like would make you do the opposite of
that's
what he was
doing. Saying. Right. Like it almost seemed like it was something different, and I don't know if like maybe he was being watched, and you know, because sometimes people out there will use that, we'll use the date rape drug just to jump you or, you know, mug you.
Yeah.
So.
Could he have been given that slightly earlier in the night?
That's kind of what I was thinking. But yeah, it doesn't seem to be a popular theory. I haven't seen anyone else say that. So I don't know. Maybe there's a reason why.
Yeah. Was that even being circulated in this area? I don't know.
We don't know. Again, like the only confirmed ones are speed, heroin, and cocaine. But
I mean, GHB is everywhere.
Yeah, true.
Right.
True. With prices going up on just about everything lately, being smart with your money is more than just a good idea. It is critical to life, it seems like. And one app that has completely changed the way that I manage my finances is Rocket Money. Rocket Money is the personal finance app that helps find and cancel those pesky, unwanted subscriptions that we all have, and we probably have a bunch of them that we don't even know about. Plus, it monitors your spending and it helps lower your bills, so you can grow your savings, or at least attempt to. I mean, I know it's tough. There's a lot of things that cost way more than they used to, and it feels like you're just shelling out more money than you're bringing in all the time. But what's amazing about Rocket Money is it'll sync your accounts. So you get your credit card accounts, get your bank accounts, and it'll actually search through them for you. It'll list out all of your subscriptions for you, and I guarantee you, you'll be shocked at how many subscriptions you're actually paying for. And I'll bet you there's one or two that you completely forgot about that you have been just paying for no reason whatsoever. So just for that reason alone, you can save yourself, what, 10, 20 bucks a month just by using Rocket Money to find those unwanted subscriptions. But not only that, you'll love the app so much that you'll want to use it to manage all of your finances on a monthly basis, because there's so many great features about it. I love it. I actually pay for the premium version of it because I love it so much. And it gives me all the features that Rocket Money offers, including credit monitoring to net worth tracking to just allows you to see all the expenses coming out of your account. It sends you email alerts when bills go up in price. But not only that, Rocket Money has some great features that does some things for you, like negotiating lower bills for you. All you have to do is upload a copy of your bill. Rocket Money will scan to find those opportunities for you. You don't have to think about it. And then they'll go and try to negotiate a lower rate for you. They'll deal with the customer service so you don't have to. Not only that, they will also go and cancel those unwanted subscriptions, at least the ones that it can. And it is just such a convenient app to use. I guarantee you, you'll end up using it every single day. So why not give it a try? Over 5 million people have tried it, including myself, and they've saved a total of $500 million in just canceled subscriptions. So cancel your unwanted subscriptions and reach your financial goals faster with Rocket Money. Go to rocketmoney.com/milehigher today. That's rocketmoney.com/milehigher. That's rocketmoney.com/milehigher today. But then at 11:15, an unnamed witness said they saw Damien trying the car door handles on a blue Ford Fiesta parked at the Harbor Lights pub. He's like trying to get into this vehicle. And according to Valerie, this was, quote, completely out of character. So when she heard about this, she's like, yeah, he wouldn't be just like trying to get into some random car.
Yeah.
Damien was next seen at a bus stop near the food co-op in West Cowes. He got on the bus, spoke to the driver about an unknown subject, tried to take a photo of the driver, and then thanked the driver before he got off again.
It's strange that it says unknown subject. Like, right. Did the driver not understand, or did they never get a full statement? Did they not explain?
So that's sourced from the BBC, like, long-form mm-hmm. article on the case. Mm-hmm. And so that's their exact wording of it, is unknown subject. My suspicion is that, as we'll get to later on, a lot of people were not spoken to. A lot of the people who he was suspected of, like, seeing that night were not spoken to by investigators.
Right.
And so I believe the subject was unknown because
Never identified him.
They never identified the bus driver, or they spoke to him years down the line and the bus driver couldn't remember what the subject was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what it seems like. Their initial investigation was so poor.
But it seems like he's having another sort of bizarre interaction with the bus driver, similar mm-hmm. to what you just saw in the chip shop. It's kind of out of it. He's kind of getting on. He's, you know, maybe incoherently talking to the bus driver about something or other, which could also be why he doesn't remember. He's like, I don't know, it's just kind of a bunch of random gibberish or whatever. And then he tried to take a photo of him, which is very odd. But then only a few minutes later at 11:59 p.m. at the same bus stop, a foster carer waiting to pick up a child from the bus watched Damien sitting nearby. And he described Damien as, quote, a miserable figure huddled eating chips.
Such a strange description, but miserable. What made him seem miserable to him? Did he look sad or depressed, or
he was just kind of sitting there mumbling to himself or something? Who knows? But then Damien, he got up and walked towards the foster carer sitting in his car. His description of Damien's height, clothes, and camera matched descriptions from both Chris and Damien's family. And according to the foster carer, he, quote, looked drugged and seemed to bank heavily into the car. Then Damien said twice to this man, quote, they're watching us. Mm. Damien then wiped rain off of the man's car windshield and then walked off towards the Pierview Public House on High Street. So is he paranoid because somebody's actually watching him, or is he just not in, he's hallucinating? I mean,
yeah. And what could he have been on to make him hallucinate to that degree?
Right, right.
That's not giving speed and, what was the other one?
Cocaine.
Yeah. That doesn't really align with those two, I don't think.
Yeah.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
Heroin?
I mean,
possible.
I don't know that much.
Yeah, I don't know either, but.
But yeah, something.
But yes, I also think he's been drinking alcohol as well. So if you mix alcohol with any of these substances, right, it could have an altered effect that could be something maybe he wasn't used to or
to make you that paranoid.
Yeah.
Or was someone really watching him? But even if that was the case and he was more in a right mind than it appeared, why would he go and say this to some random person, you know?
I also think this is like, again, just something I've been tossing around in my head is that like this portion of the night is very well surveyed. Like almost all of his movements were caught on a surveillance somewhere, surveillance camera somewhere on Cowes High Street. And so it's interesting that he says they are watching us when he is literally being watched by all these different security cameras. Again, who knows if he was aware of that, but it still is interesting that those cameras were certainly watching him.
Yeah, it is interesting. It's very confusing.
Yeah, yeah, it's just bizarre. And it's just like, why didn't he go home? He was out with his friend Chris, and then he was like, all right, have a good night.
Chris thought he was
thinking they're
home.
Both going home for the night. And then he goes back to Cowhide Street.
Yeah, I think it was due to a confused state of mind.
I don't know.
Intoxicated state of mind, most likely. But then only minutes later, he was caught on CCTV for the last time before he vanished. Even though all of his movements for the past 3 hours had been captured all across High Street, he was not caught on any of the remaining cameras for the rest of the night. And from here, Damien would have had 2 possible routes back home. He could have either walked through the park or along the beach and seafront, as these were the only routes without CCTV cameras that would have captured him. Valerie was convinced that he would not have taken the coastal path because it was a nasty night and dark and unfriendly along the seafront, and that walk would have not appealed to him. But, you know, we've all been chatting about that, and she obviously knows him better and knows the area better. But if he was really heavily under the influence of something, I don't know if those thoughts would have really come up at all, or if he would have even considered that, you know?
Yeah. I mean, in this state of mind, anything is possible, I think. But again, is this an isolated incident, the way that this night went down? Is there other reported nights like this where he would, you know, go out, get messed up, and then try to make his way home?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's hard to say exactly. So it seems out, again, the family saying this is out of character for him. So they're indicating that this is a very singular,
something seemed to be very
odd event.
Odd.
Yeah, that this was unlike any other night that they've known about. But then again, he was also hanging out with a lot of people that they didn't know about. So how much did they actually know about what he was doing?
Right, right. That's a good point.
I mean, teenage boy is going to hide a lot of things from his parents. So maybe he was telling them one thing, but in reality, he was doing a bunch of other things when they weren't around. So it's really hard to say. But
we also don't know if he had at some point completed this walk when, say, he was like a little more sober, you know, and if, you know, if he would have done it on the seafront, totally fine. That one time, even in your messed up state, like there's a potential there he comes across. He's like, oh, I've done this before. I can do it again.
And I'm not going to really consider the conditions that are currently happening now. Right. So aside from the park and the seafront, Sun Hill would be the only road that he could have taken away from High Street and the cameras. However, the streets were very quiet even on Friday and Saturday nights. And according to BBC reporter Bronig Monroe, who actually retraced this same route the same time of the year that Damien did, she said, quote, "You can hear people's conversations in their homes from the street. Noise travels, all of the streets and side roads are overlooked by windows. If something did happen to Damien that night, how was it not seen or heard?" Which I do think is a fair point. But even in a situation where you can hear, he could have been seen and heard and people just didn't think anything of it at the time.
That is a good point. I mean, like, even though it's quiet on a Friday and Saturday night, it still is one of those nights. And,
yeah,
you know, there's maybe they have heard other things because they're close enough to High Street to where they're like, oh, whatever. You know,
yeah, and they hear it all the time,
right?
You know? Plus, yeah, it's very possible that he just happened to not be seen or heard. Just no one, either people weren't home or they weren't paying attention or they're sleeping or whatever it is. So I don't think that necessarily proves anything, but it is an interesting point. And of course, I've never been there myself, and I am not a BBC reporter, so I don't really know shit about shit, I guess. But the next morning, Damien's little sister, Melissa, heard someone stirring in one of the upstairs bedrooms and walked up to wake her brothers. So she found James as he was just waking up, but to her surprise, Damien was nowhere in sight. And according to Melissa, she said, I ran to tell my mother about this, and I remember seeing panic set in almost immediately. She contacted anyone she thought might know where Damien was, but they were all as unaware of us. And I think that quote is very telling, that this was so shocking to his whole family, but especially to his mother. I think that says a lot about how consistent he was about coming home, and this was so out of the norm. And the final straw here is when they called Chris Boone's house, asking if Damien had maybe spent the night there. And Chris returned home shortly after he and Damien had parted ways in the park, but Chris hadn't heard anything from his best friend since. Valerie went to the police station to report Damien missing at 3 p.m. on November 3rd, a little over 12 hours since he had disappeared. However, the Nettles family said that in the beginning, the police were basically uninterested in investigating Damien's disappearance. Seems like they truly did not give a fuck. According to Melissa, who went with Valerie to the police station, she said, I vividly remember them shrugging it off as though it was no big deal. They suggested that he had probably run away, as most 16-year-olds do, and that he would return in due time. She said, really, having been a 16-year-old myself, this sort of behavior is absolutely not the norm. And of course, we hear this all the time. It makes you want to beat your head on a table.
Yeah, why are the police telling a parent, like, what you know, how their child is acting, you know?
Yeah.
Like, oh, that's just a normal thing for your child to be gone for 12 hours.
And it's like, I'd love to be able to say, well, this was a long time ago, and this is how, and it was more common back then, but we still see this today. We still see it today with teenagers. It's insanely frustrating. But Melissa remembered going home and sitting there with a knot in her stomach as her dad and grandfather went out and searched for Damien.
So again, it's super important to note here that the police did extremely little in the beginning. Their story, almost entirely unchanged for many years, was that Damien had walked into the Solent trying to get to Portsmouth to visit his sister, since he had been asking about her all night over town that night before he disappeared. And that seems like just a very lazy yep. way to explain his disappearance. Well, he just went in the water.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Well, and I feel like we've seen this like a ton of times whenever there's a disappearance case near water. It's just the cops immediately jump to, like, that's where he is.
He must have been in the water.
Yep. And it's like, I think it's just easier for them.
Well, there could be a million other things that could have happened. There could have been a crime that happened here. He could have been kidnapped. He could have been sexually assaulted. He could have been, there's a million other things that could have happened, but to just go off of, like, well,
no, he fell or jumped into the
water. He was talking about his sister the night before, and she's across the water, so maybe he went in the water.
Come on. So it's just like offensive. It's so stupid and ridiculous.
Well, it doesn't even make a whole lot of sense, because according to numerous people familiar with the Strait, the tidal formations force anything that goes into the water between Cowes and Portsmouth to wash up somewhere along the Isle of Wight. He would have washed up.
Yeah, 100%.
They would have found his body almost, you know, immediately within the couple of days. Some searches were done specifically in the water between East and West Cowes, but police did not search various areas of interest, such as the park where Damien had left Chris and the park that he could have walked through on his way home. The two places that we know for a fact something could have happened. He could have come into contact with somebody trying to harm him in these parks that one was 100% in, and the other one he was in as well. It's like, why wouldn't you go look where he could have possibly been abducted?
Lazy. Lack of care.
Or he could have just hurt himself, fell into a hole. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of things that could have happened, and they don't even search those. They're just like,
pathetic.
Nope. Out in the street.
Pisses me off so much.
Town counselor in front of the Nettles family, Dr. Corin Lawrence, described an instance where she talked to Hampshire police about Damien's case, quote, "The whole time the police insisted that he must have gone into the water, but I never believed that. The police were awful, and at one stage, they called Valerie and I hysterical women."
That's so offensive.
Everything you need to know.
Mm-hmm.
You guys are just being hysterical women.
Ugh, I would have been like, fuck you.
Yeah, terrible. Dr. Lawrence said, quote, "The police wouldn't do anything, so I took it upon myself to walk down the street asking left and right to see if anyone had seen him. The man in the chip shop just told me that he had this little camera above the door and that I was welcome to have a look." So she's finding this out before the police have even bothered to go and check where he had been that night.
They didn't do anything.
Which Dr. Lauren's own investigation is why we have the footage from the Yorkie's chip shop that we showed you earlier. And one of the key pieces of evidence in understanding Damien's state that night. It's how we even know he was acting very, very odd, definitively, is from that video. If we go back, five men appeared on the footage with Damien, and they were engaging in friendly conversation. In the early investigation, police completely ruled out just speaking to them altogether. It would take nearly a decade before an internal investigation for the police to identify and attempt to talk to them. And when they did, they learned that the men were in the military and were not on the aisle long after Damien's disappearance. And at this point, they did not have a complete memory of their quick interaction. However, if they had been interviewed in 1996, they could have potentially remembered important information about Damien's plan that night, overheard him say something, maybe even said something directly to them. But no, they waited a decade before actually talking to them. And at that point, it's just too late. Through interviews and CCTV footage, Dr. Lawrence and the Nettles family were able to piece together the rough timeline of Damien's whereabouts that night. This includes many instances of Damien asking people for cigarettes, and even a moment where he spoke to someone sitting inside a Ford Fiesta, which again, if you remember, that was the same kind of car he had tried to open earlier in the night. But police never talked to that person, and it's unclear if it was the same Fiesta from earlier in the evening, which seems like a very important thing to figure out in this type of investigation. He was trying to get into a Ford Fiesta. Whose Fiesta was it? Is it the same one? Maybe that could explain where he went. But no, none of that happens. In reference to the police's horrible investigation, Dr. Lawrence went on to say, "We pushed and pulled with them. It was almost as though it wasn't good for cows for this to happen. They kept trying to justify their actions or inactions to Valerie, but really they did nothing." At one point, after the police had been given the CCTV footage, Valerie was brought in to confirm Damien's identity, only to learn that the police had been tracking the wrong person on the footage. It's like, oh my Lord. After Valerie corrected their mistake, she said, "It was the last time I ever saw my son alive." God,
it's so
how embarrassing for them. Bring her in and they're like, "All right, so this, we've been following this person's whereabouts." She's like, "That's not even my son."
Yeah.
Did she even look at the report that I filed? It's like,
idiots.
Good God.
So then, somehow, the police lost that footage.
Okay, this is just sketchy.
I know.
Yeah, what this the is, hell?
I know.
Oopsie, we lost it.
Yeah. I always question when they try to say
How do you lose something like that?
I don't know. And it happens all the time.
All the time.
Like, almost, I feel like most cases,
because a lot of,
like, some lost evidence.
It's because there are a lot of these departments are still operating in, like, the 1950s.
Yeah.
They haven't, they're record
especially
keeping.
Back then, and, yeah.
But even then, it's like, how hard is it to put it into a lockbox?
Right.
And, right. Something, and, something vital
or
like
a filing
that.
Cabinet yeah. with a label. Like, there's no excuse for it.
Which, that's why sometimes I don't even believe that that's the case. I feel like it's purposely lost. But I don't know. I don't know if that's the case here, but sometimes I do wonder.
Yeah. Are people just throwing, like, it's not getting up and walking away.
Right.
If it's lost, someone did something with it.
Yeah.
Or is someone like, cleaning up, they're like, I don't need this.
Yeah,
it's
maybe.
Trash.
Uh-huh.
That's not lost.
Right.
Or they, what I was saying more is like,
they
some,
purposely
I think they possibly.
Are just like,
no, I don't know if that's the case in this case.
No,
but
yeah.
I do think that that happens.
What if the police are involved?
They could be.
I mean, I think there is a potential because the Isle of Wight is somewhat of a tourist destination. It is like this beautiful island people from the English mainland go and visit, especially not necessarily this time of year, but they want to go see it. It's historic.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. And so there might be an element of like, we can't have a kidnapping, a murder on our hands, similar to
last week,
Ellie Warren's
exactly.
case last
exactly.
week. Yeah, within Mozambique. But yeah, according to the Business Association member who had collected the footage, Hampshire police said they had an evidence sheet that they stated they had given back to him, even though he never received it. Valerie later complained about the loss to the Independent Police Complaints Commission in 2005. However, she was told the offending officer had already been dealt with, I'm sure, but was never told what measure exactly was taken against him. So highly doubt he was dealt with that sternly. Henry Wrigley, then harbor master of the Port and Cows, said, "We got the charts out and I calculated for them the tidal movements, tidal sets, and rate, as well as possibilities in case he slipped into the water. I am certain that had he gone into the water that night, he would have returned to land," which would make sense, right? Wrigley said that a thorough search warrant was issued for the waters surrounding the isle, but still, nothing was found. Then there's another theory presented by police, that Damien had just run away, and it doesn't make sense. The ferries to the mainland had stopped running before midnight, and if he had gone somewhere else on the isle, it's more than likely that somebody would have spotted him in the days, months, and years following his disappearance, right? Just makes no sense. Plus, also, why? He had no signs of wanting to run away in his life, and it's always strange when something like this is brought up for someone where it just is completely, would be completely out of pocket, make no sense. So what about the third most likely theory, that Damien had met up with the new crowd that he had been hanging out with to buy hard drugs, which is why he was so intoxicated at Yorkies, and somebody from that crowd did something to him? Damien's girlfriend at the time, Gemma Nunn, said that at no stage did they ask me any questions about Damien taking drugs or Damien getting into trouble or talking about something bad happening to Damien. Police wouldn't even consider the possibility of foul play until nearly a decade after his disappearance. Just let that sink in.
Makes zero sense.
No, it's bullshit. And Valerie obviously was bitter about how the police handled the investigation, as anyone would be. She said they were very brusque, which I had never heard that word. What does brusque exactly mean?
It in an offhand or like abrupt way. So it's okay. Just like they're like shooing her off, basically.
Okay. Brusque.
Like dismissive.
That
dismissive,
sounds like
exactly.
That's what that would mean. But yeah, she said, "Now they have apologized to us and admitted that something sinister had happened," which I'm sure was pretty validating for them to at least get that.
But a little too late.
Yeah, way too fucking late. But I mean, I'm sure.
Yeah, I mean, to
some degree to get.
It's better than never admitting
right.
that they were wrong, but still.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
But Operation Ridgewood, which is the police name for the investigation, was carried out immediately. However, police did not retain most of the evidence collected during the investigation, and that includes call logs to the police station that night that Damien disappeared, police notebooks, and details about which officers were initially working the case. The investigation was not handed to the Major Crimes Unit until March of 2002. And around this time, a new suspect entered the picture. An unnamed informant told police that local drug dealer Nikki McNamara killed Damien.
This is all so weird to me because it seems like they have informants, right? They have informants. They're dealing with organized crime here. Why did they not use these connections initially?
I don't know. I was thinking the same.
It just doesn't make any sense to me. Like, is the incompetence so high that they just we think he went into the water? But after a couple searches of the water, not finding, I mean, how dumb are they? They know the way that these tides work, and they would have found it. Just something seems off to me, as almost if they're trying to cover up something or they don't want something to be known about maybe a larger investigation that they knew he was involved in. I don't know. It's just something is weird about this. It doesn't make sense.
I think to me, it's more just laziness and incompetence.
I know. I just feel like we say that all the time. And I'm like, well, really? They're all incompetent and lazy?
Not all law enforcement.
There's not a single officer.
But
in
most of the cases that we cover where they need coverage and they have fucked up, like, yeah, I think it's laziness and incompetence a lot of the time, and understaffing. And
I think that's...
You think it's more something sinister, like they're purposely, which does happen, of course. We've covered cases where police cover up.
Yeah, but I think they're covering up for their own benefit versus, I don't think it's necessarily they're covering up because they're criminally involved
with
it.
They're embarrassed for their mistakes.
No, they're covering up because maybe they have undercovers or something like that that could be involved. There could be like some type of larger organized crime investigation going on where...
So you're getting deep with it.
Yeah, there could be multiple layers to this. Sometimes I have to think, it can't just all be this dumb. Like this cut and dry and dumb and
I think in this case, I don't know. I think I'm leaning towards dumb and lazy.
I don't know. I'm curious if anybody from this area has any experience with the authorities out there, knows like what's the, you know, and I haven't, obviously I don't know anybody personally here or been to this location even, so I can't really make any definitive judgment, but I'm just like, could there be, because of the organized crime, there's a lot of crime going on here, has been for a very long time. Is there very complicated webs of maybe even, you know, maybe there's corrupt law enforcement, maybe there's law enforcement that's infiltrated into the crime, but they can't yet reveal because of XYZ. So they, unfortunately, they have to kind of overlook something that maybe happened to Damien in an effort to protect the rest of their investigation, something like that. That's just a thought.
I hope
that's not
like
the case.
Genuinely. I think that would speak to them actually knowing there's at least an issue going on in the area, specifically surrounding like an actual crazy drugs scene, you know?
I think
for a lot of, you know, especially this kind of town in England, they have this kind of idea of themselves being very quaint. And that's why I do kind of lean more towards you, Kendall, because I think that's, you know, in even these police minds who have seen some shit go down here, I think they still might have this opinion of their area as being like a very quaint, quiet area.
Yeah.
And they, not that they don't want that to change, but that to them, they're like, no, that stuff doesn't happen in cows. That stuff doesn't happen.
So we're going to like turn a blind eye to it.
Right.
Situation. Yeah. And I mean, before you make a decision, you got to hear more about what we know about Nikki. So Nikki had been a known entity around the time that Damien disappeared. And Damien had not only purchased drugs from him, but had been seen at parties with him and other associates of his operation. However, 8 years after the informant told the police, he felt they hadn't acted on anything. In addition, Nikki had died in 2002 of a drug overdose. In 2010, the informant went to Valerie directly, and he told her that Nikki had gotten into an argument with Damien that night surrounding weed, which Damien owed money for. And according to this informant, Nikki threw a punch in anger. However, the blow had accidentally killed Damien, which I really do think this theory is quite possible. Then his body was hidden in a well-known drug den in Cowes for up to 3 weeks before he was buried near a cycle path in a sale bag. And Valerie immediately took this information to police, along with a new senior investigating officer. Searches and arrests were finally made concerning Damien's disappearance.
And all of the arrests made were associates and links to Nikki McNamara. And a cycle path was searched that connected Cowes to the nearby town of Newport, but unfortunately, nothing was found. Unfortunately, police eventually decided that this informant was untrustworthy. And according to them, he had changed his story numerous times, including details about how and where Damien was buried. However, when BBC reporter Bronagh Munro tracked down the informant, he told the story exactly as he had told Valerie, stating, quote, "It was a punch thrown in anger. McNamara never meant to kill Damien. It was a beating went wrong." The reporters even searched the areas the informant had told them about with cadaver dogs. However, they found nothing. And unfortunately, over the years, many people have come to the family with completely false stories and rumors, and they felt that have just wasted their time and police resources. There was even a rumor dating back to 1999 that a notorious pedophile had kidnapped Damien. This theory still gets discussed despite the fact that police learned that he had left the island months before Damien disappeared. But more rumors kept coming. Another convicted pedophile made a false confession to killing Damien, rumors that he was a victim of a sexual assault within the drug scene, and another that he was beaten up and accidentally killed after he tried to protect his friend from abuse. However, all of these theories have been disproven in the years since Damien's disappearance. While the motive and location of Damien's body changes between different stories, Nikki remains the most consistent suspect. Police investigated his involvement between 2002 and 2005. However, they couldn't find anything substantial, which is interesting to me that he is the prime suspect, yet they can't really find any link of substance.
Yeah.
I think part of that is because he did die in 2002. You know, I think they couldn't, you know, directly question him. And a lot of the people he was associating with were, you know, drug addicts. So it's like they don't necessarily have anything of substance to say. Or maybe they just discredit whatever they're saying, you know.
Right.
And it's too late to review CCTV footage.
Yep. Exactly.
Yep. That's long gone.
Wonderful.
Yeah, it's a little too late for a lot of things here. Counselor Lynn Hammond was told the same story as the unnamed informant, and another informant claimed that they had seen Nikki burning body parts and clothing the day after Damien's disappearance. The Golden Hills Fort, near where Damien disappeared, was a notorious open-air party venue with random raves and events constantly. By 1996, heroin was becoming very popular within the scene, and Damien had been seen partying at the venue with members of the hard drug scene. There's also this guy named Bunny Isles. Never heard that name before.
Maybe if we have a boy one day, we should name him Bunny.
Bunny.
I kind of like it.
Maybe. Is that his real name or is that a name?
I think it's got
to be a name.
Right? It could be. I know of like girls that have been named Bunny. I've heard that before.
Hmm.
I will say across every article I read about this guy, it was always Bunny. There was no birth name associated with him. So
maybe it was his. I don't know. I'm going to look it up. Bunny is a name.
One of the dealing houses was above a butcher shop that a witness claimed he saw Damien shouting up to the night of his disappearance. However, Bunny told Valerie himself that he never sold Damien drugs and had nothing to do with his investigation. He admitted that he was arrested and his house was searched concerning Damien's case, but that he completely maintained that he and Nikki had nothing to do with it. So there's that. And I mean, do we really believe him?
Yeah, that's
probably not.
We can't really believe him. I will say the one thing in his favor is he said that directly to Valerie, like to her face. And I don't know, people can lie, of course, but there's something to that.
Yeah,
it is a real name, Bunny. It's an English name. Checks out.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
All right. However, there's one more rumor to the Nikki McNamara theory. Nikki died in the home of his girlfriend, Shirley Barrett. He had overdosed on heroin and wasn't checked on in the bathroom, where he had laid dead for 3 days.
God, that is crazy to think about.
Shirley's house was nicknamed the House of Death for the number of people who died there due to drug overdoses. That's just scary. Oh my God.
Yeah, and after Nikki died, a rumor began circulating that he had made a deathbed confession to killing Damien, and only one other person would have been around to hear it, and that would be Shirley Barrett. However, Shirley denied that he confessed to her, and on top of that, she was also using heroin to such an extent that she actually didn't notice that Nikki had died until 3 days after his overdose, if you were wondering how that happened. Lots of heroin in that home. Private investigator Ivor Edwards took up the case in 2007 and explicitly stated that the local police did not want him to investigate the disappearance. But Ivor did spend 5 years investigating the Nikki theory and was able to find a man who claimed to have seen Nikki beating Damien against a wall on Bars Hill around the time that he disappeared. And another man was with him, Daniel Spencer. So that man spoke to police in 2005, and Daniel was arrested in 2011 in connection with the case. However, he was eventually set free. He would later deny having anything to do with this case. The Hampshire Constabulary has apologized for the loss of evidence in Damien's case, as you should, and that 1,134 people have been involved in the case, investigators, witnesses, and people of interest. They also said this to the BBC, quote, "Hampshire Constabulary continues to take action to keep the case open for any new leads. A decision was made in 2013 for the files on Damien Nettles to remain with the force's major crime team for ongoing regular checks. This move followed an extensive review of all information gathered by police during inquiries into Damien's disappearance in November of 1996. So Damien's parents, Valerie and Edward, did later move to Dallas, Texas, but still returned to the Isle of Wight to meet with people or to find new information regarding Damien's disappearance. They certainly haven't given up on him. Valerie supported new legislation called Damien's Law, which focused on creating new protocols regarding missing young people, especially after they have spent the night drinking. And despite receiving 7,000 signatures, very impressive, the law was never passed. However, a missing persons information hub was passed in 2022, so pretty recently, and that was an element of the legislation. So that's, you know, got to take the small victories. Valerie is still searching for anything that could help find Damien. Speaking to the BBC, she said, quote, finding his body or what's left of it would be a gift. And it might not end, you know, the distress, but if I could place him somewhere instead of thinking of every awful thing that might have happened to him and wondering if he cried for us. God, that is heartbreaking.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
What if I told you that right now, millions of people are living with a debilitating condition that's so misunderstood, many of them don't even know that they have it? That condition is obsessive compulsive disorder, or OCD. I'm Dr. Patrick McGrath, the Chief Clinical Officer of NOCD. And in the 25 years I've been treating OCD, I've met so many people who were suffering from the condition in silence, unaware of just what it was. OCD can create overwhelming anxiety and fear around what you value most, make you question your identity, beliefs, and morals, and drive you to perform mentally and physically draining compulsions or rituals. Over my career, I've seen just how devastating OCD can be when it's left untreated. But help is available. That's where NOCD comes in. NOCD is the world's largest virtual therapy provider for obsessive-compulsive disorder. Our licensed therapists are trained in exposure and response prevention therapy, a specialized treatment proven to be incredibly effective for OCD. So visit NOCD.com to schedule a free 15-minute call with our team. That's NOCD.com.
So anyone with new facts or information about Damien Nettles' disappearance can call the Hampshire Constabulary on 101 and, quote, Operation Ridgewood. Information can also be given anonymously to Crime Stoppers on 0800-55111.
Do we all agree the most likely scenario is that likely Mr. McNamara, it went down the way that these witnesses said it did, or these informants said it did?
I definitely lean mostly towards that, although I do think there is a chance that he came, and I mean, there's not a whole lot of evidence for this, but I always think about situations like this with younger people. Could he have been given some type of drug, been slipped something, and then just was followed and stalked, and the wrong person ended up with him at the end of the night? I don't know.
Could have been, yeah.
But that's definitely, there's not a whole lot of evidence for that theory. I think Nikki's theory makes the most sense. It's hard to imagine a punch hard enough to kill someone, but certainly can happen. We talked about that recently. What case recently did we talk about?
Blair Adams.
Blair Adams, yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm. That was punch to the stomach, but yeah. Still.
Was he really that involved, though? And, like, why would he... What would have been that scenario? Like, did he really, like, take money from them? And then, like, he owed him money, and so they were going to beat him up, and then the beating went sideways and turned into kill. Is it possible? Sure. But
yeah,
I don't know.
I think it honestly is quite possible.
I remember in the BBC documentary, multiple people described Nikki as a very violent person. Now, mm-hmm. certain people, like Shirley, push back on that.
Yeah.
But there were many others who said, like, he was violent and he would turn on just anything. However, they were all like, he would have never have killed Damien on purpose. They made sure to say that.
Yeah. And I think what's interesting, too, is in the documentary, it's a BBC documentary. It's on YouTube if any of you guys want to go check it out. I think it's nine parts.
They're all short. Like 15 minutes long.
Yeah, they're very short. But when they interview Shirley, I mean, she's just so defensive. She's like pissed off that they're even talking to her and like she's so defensive of him that I don't really believe anything that she's saying. And I think she was just protecting him in a lot of ways. But yeah, I mean, there were plenty of people who just said that he was very, very violent, and the type of drugs that he was using and selling can make that even worse. So I think in a situation like that, especially when you're trying to assert dominance over someone and like teach them a lesson, someone younger, that it certainly could have been that bad, that a beating could have led to his death. And obviously they would have covered it up.
I don't know. It just seems like why would the police not have figured that out sooner?
Babe.
It's like, come on.
No, come on to you. You're shocked by that? I mean, of course, look at how they've handled this. You think they would have been able to figure it out sooner? They didn't care. They were like, he ran away. He's young and he'll come back.
Yeah, if that's what really happened. But I tend to lean more towards there's some other reason they just chose not to investigate this per se. That this wasn't just as simple. Maybe there was somebody else involved within the department or investigation. Yeah, I don't know. It just seems like so dumb. Like, come on.
I think it was just dumb.
Another scenario that could have happened is just as tragic is that he just wanted to continue his night out on Cow Street. He took something. Maybe he didn't have experience with this particular substance, and he ended up falling off one of the cliffs out there into the water.
It's possible. It's just the chances of him not turning up are so slim.
Bodies sometimes don't always come back up to the surface.
I know, but with the way that this area is set up.
He could just be at the bottom of the water. He could just be at the bottom of the ocean.
Could. It just seems very unlikely. I don't know.
It's possible.
Well, they say like the tides bring everything, eventually everything comes up.
Right.
But if he sank to the bottom, he's not going to come back up. And there's a possibility his body may not resurface.
And they didn't search at all, right?
No. Yeah.
Well, they did. They did many water searches specifically in that like channel between East and West Cows, and then in the water and other areas. So there were water searches that
did they dive though?
That's the thing. I doubt it.
I don't think they actually died.
Diving searches.
They just searched the top of the water, so it's possible he's under the water.
As far as we know, they may have done dive searches. We don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I didn't see anything of them doing any diving.
But I don't believe, and I also think the searches, if I remember correctly, were carried out by the harbor master, really. Like the cops were involved, but it was using surface vessels to search.
Right.
So
right.
I'd go out and do this.
Right.
Yeah.
So it is possible that he sunk to the bottom. It just seems very unlikely.
I don't know. Of course it's possible.
Because, I mean, that's just based on so many different factors. But
I think it's interesting that so many people have spoken out about Nikki's violence and, I don't know, just how defensive Shirley was in those interviews. That kind of got to me. I don't know.
So,
or maybe she's defensive because he was genuinely innocent. I don't know. It's just such a
Put his remains? Did they scatter his remains? Did they throw his remains in the water?
Well, they believe that he could have been buried outside somewhere in the forest. And there was also someone, I don't know if we already went over it, but
yeah, there was that one witness who said that he saw Nikki burning body parts. So he could have just burned it all up.
And he seemed, that witness was also highly disturbed by the whole thing. And I don't think he just made it up. He could have. I don't know. I think I lean like 90% towards Nikki and maybe 10% towards something else.
Which sucks because he's dead. So now
Nikki,
we'll never know.
Yeah. Yep. I know. Which is always so frustrating.
You know, that's why I think a more hopeful version is of at least of the police investigation. Like the way they treated Valerie was unacceptable regardless. Mm-hmm. But like you said, like perhaps they did have a working investigation case against Nikki. Mm-hmm. And they were like, well, we can't, you know, ruin this because it's going to lead us to a larger operation. And then he just died in 2002. So they couldn't continue with that investigation, and they had lost all this shit in Damien's case.
Yeah.
I think that's a far more hopeful version. I hope that's what happened instead of just complete incompetence.
It wasn't just like, we ignored this kid's disappearance completely.
I hope you guys are right. And I'm probably so cynical and annoying at this point with police, but especially when it comes to, you know, cases with minors, when they have that initial runaway, you know, fuck you, attitude, it makes me so angry that I pretty much write them off for the rest of the investigation. But
I understand. That's just me.
It's just infuriating.
Happens way too much.
Constantly. Where and it happens less and less now, yeah. But yeah. Still happens in 2025. So there's that.
When parents who know their child best are being like, this is out of character for my kid for them to be gone this long. No. It's a teenage boy. You don't know what you're talking about.
They're crazy teenagers.
They'll come back.
The hormones. Yeah, it's just so
offensive.
Like,
why not go look? Why not just go start? Mm-hmm. Start the investigation now.
Yep.
But no, it doesn't
And
happen.
So often when they start on that note and they don't take it seriously in the beginning, that just continues on as the investigation goes. But
yeah. I don't know. It's really unfortunate.
I'm also cynical from all the years of covering bad police work.
But yeah.
To be clear, it's not all bad.
No,
most
it's not
of the
all
case,
bad.
The cases that we cover, obviously.
Well, the ones that are unsolved,
the
there's usually
we,
a reason they're unsolved.
Right. Yeah.
One way or another. And
there are some great officers and great investigations.
Well, we don't cover the ones that are being solved.
Not often. Sometimes we do. And that's always refreshing.
Where the police are falling through.
Yeah.
Well, the Rachel Morin case is a great example of a case where they did do a lot of work. And they ended up finding the guy.
Mm-hmm.
So there are where it just takes
I recently covered some pretty good police work on a couple of episodes on my show too.
Well, the thing that's hard about it is there is usually in a lot of cases there's a lot of things that just aren't released to the public. So to us it seems like nothing is happening. Mm-hmm. But behind the scenes there's could be a lot of things happening. We just don't know about it.
But in this case
maybe there was stuff behind the scenes and they just
I doubt it.
They couldn't jump full in on his case because of another investigation going on that led to a larger network of crimes and other murders and assaults, maybe. I mean, it does happen, but I think it's probably unlikely. I think they want to protect the quaintness of this community, that they didn't want a 16-year-old was murdered here by a drug lord. That's going
to
scare people.
Yeah,
it's
just
gonna,
add to
people
the
are
going to
want to come to
growing
this
conversation about crime in this area anyway.
Right, yeah. Right. Yeah. And it sounds like it has gotten much better.
Yeah.
After all these years, still crime-ridden. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm curious to hear anybody out there from the UK who's been here, personal firsthand experience with the Isle of Wight, what your thoughts are, because obviously, you know, we only have so much perspective here on this area. So let us know. Also, let us know what you think happened to Damien Nettles. Of course, all the information regarding his case, if you have any information, is down below in the show notes description. Anything helps in any of these investigations. But we're going to go ahead and wrap up today's episode there. We appreciate you so much for joining us.
We do.
And the crew and I.
We'll be your crew and I.
The crew and I. Yeah. I'm the captain of the ship today.
I am the captain.
But we'll be back next week. We got some great episodes coming up.
Yeah, we do.
Very interesting ones.
I'm really looking forward to next week's episode.
Excited to dive in on. But we'll see you guys next time.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.